Countries are arriving, artists are rehearsing. The Eurovision Song Contest is almost here. This year, we've been trying to get an idea of who could win Eurovision using The Model. It's a prediction tool that combines betting odds, community rankings, and historical data to give the most accurate projection of what would happen if Eurovision was held today. Today is now closer than ever. My name's James Stevenson, and for the final time in 2026, we're going inside the model here on ESC Insight. And this week, we're not doing another update. Instead, we're going to take a look at the model itself. I'm going to tell you about some of the things that numbers just can't predict, along with the things it can, so that we can get a clearer picture of what the model might call accurately at Eurovision 2026, and the things that it could miss completely. So, for one last time, let's step inside the model. Eurovision 2026 is almost upon us, and that means we'll know this year's winner in less than a fortnight. To try to understand who the contenders might be at this year's grand final, the model has been providing weekly updates from mid-March on what it believes the Eurovision Song Contest could look like. This year, Finland has been the model's number one entry in all but the first week's projections. However, this week, we're learning more about each of the 35 competing songs than ever before. We'll see previews of every song's all-important staging concept, more bets on the contest will be made, and projects like the Eurovision Audience Poll will give us greater insight into what we think fans and viewers will vote for during the three live shows. So, as we prepare to head to Vienna, I'm going to tell you 10 realistic things the model may miss at the Eurovision Song Contest 2026. As with any prediction, take these with a pinch of salt, and hopefully you might look at the contest a little differently once you hear these. Number 1. Eurovision fans and viewers want different things. Any update with the model is based on the data we have available at that given time. At this point in the process, with the contest a couple of weeks away, the vast majority of those engaging with polls and rankings are those who are deeply engaged with Eurovision, like you and me. Our opinions might be based on a greater knowledge of the contest and what's likely to do well, but that often creates an echo chamber. Bookies will also look at the data they have available to them when pricing their markets for the contest. So, once again, the opinions of fans can look much firmer than they actually are in reality. The model itself latches onto all of this data and creates a most likely outcome. But what it's working from is almost entirely crafted by a small, passionate subset of the Eurovision viewing public. That means, even for the semi-finals, there's an influx of new viewers who are coming in completely cold. And what the viewing public latches onto is becoming harder to predict. In 2025's second semi-final, I remember that the bookies predicted Latvia's Burman Laimi to miss the final altogether, but while many fans and the model called that it would make it, nobody thought that it would finish in second place that night. And if that influx of new viewers wasn't enough, 10 times that audience will be only joining us for the grand final on the Saturday night. While not all of them are going to vote, of course, that's another reset of the narrative. This is why often semi-final results and grand final results can be totally contradictory. If you think back to last year again, Wasted Love was fifth in its semi-final and first overall on Saturday. Because we don't know the semi-final results on the night either, this is a very difficult thing to calculate. Number 2. The New Look Juries. This year, the juries are getting their biggest shake-up in a generation. The groups casting 50% of the points in all shows for the first time since 2022 will be bigger, expanding from 5 members to 7. Not only that, two of those jurors must be 25 or under, demonstrating that Eurovision wants its results to more accurately reflect the tastes of its target demographic. This is the first time we've ever seen this, and that means there is a bit of guesswork involved. On one hand, there's a belief among some that introducing more jurors and reducing the average age may create more consensus between juries and the public. And the public's desired winner hasn't walked away with the crystal microphone in 3 years, so you can understand why Eurovision might want this. There's a risk of fewer people voting if they feel like their song is going to be dismissed by the jurors before their points even get added to the equation. But conversely, there's another school of thought that says juries could actually go the other way. Ben Robertson was on Inside the Model a few weeks ago from ESC Insight, and he's done a study into the new jury rules. He says, the biggest statistical factor we have observed within Eurovision juror taste hasn't been age, gender, or other variables, but who one watches the song contest with. Because of this, you could find jury opinions solidify further on the score sheet, with the average of 7 creating a firmer mean than the average of 5. In a year that so far appears to have no runaway favourites, how these new juries behave will be critical to seeing how Eurovision plays out. Number 3. The model story isn't what the viewers want. In 2025, the model ran several updates in the lead-up to Eurovision, just like this year, that painted a clear picture of the contest to come. It said that Sweden's Kai were the favourites, just like the bookies, but their issue could have been on the jury side. On that side, France's Luan was projected throughout as the song that could win the most points from the jurors, with Austria seen as a solid bet on both sides, but not enough to cross the winning hurdle. That narrative wasn't completely off. However, its story that year didn't foresee two key developments that shifted the race in JJ's direction. France's staging, which was much anticipated in the lead-up to the contest, ended up almost harming Luan more than helping her. Graham Norton's infamous comment that it looked like something other than sand was a good indicator of what people thought of it. Jurors also didn't support the song as much as was expected. That meant Austria, the second favourite with the model throughout that season with the jurors, was able to take a lot of the points that France didn't earn. The second force was that Sweden wasn't as powerful in the public vote, with Estonia being the song that the public preferred. As the two countries were in the same voting block and had songs that had a similar novelty factor, Tommy Cash's points almost came directly from Sweden's expected televote. But with Estonia struggling on the jury side, as was predicted, Espresso Macchiato still didn't have enough to take the overall win. By understanding those two things, it would be a lot easier to see Austria's victory coming. This year's current story, with Finland seen as the favourite on the public vote side and benefiting from no runaway leader on the jury side, could be accurate. But the audience might have different ideas to what we have. Number 4. Unexpected momentum. The biggest blind spot in trying to predict the Eurovision Song Contest is that almost nobody has heard the songs yet. Of course, we have. We've lived with these songs for the best part of 3 months, 4 months in some cases. We know which songs the fans largely like and don't, and that colours our understanding of how each song should perform at the contest. But there's a huge difference between hearing the song in its national final, or even at a pre-party, and seeing it on the Eurovision stage. When the public sees these songs, they won't be looking at them in anything like the same way we do. Most viewers watch Eurovision for far less active reasons. A friend might have invited them to a party, they might have been channel hopping, or they've just got it on in the background while watching another screen. As our conversations are only with actively engaged fans like us, it's hard to know which songs can catch somebody totally off guard in the way big contenders can. While there is evidence of the viewing public broadly becoming more knowledgeable about the entries going in, there are reactions you just can't predict. When I was in Italy for the Festival di Sanremo, nobody had Sal da Vinci as one of the favourites going into the week. But when people heard Per Sempre Si and felt that warm, fuzzy feeling inside, suddenly the whole town was moving to Sal's rhythm. Momentum can come from anywhere and totally rip up the script. Number 5. The high margin of error. Many statistical models are based on running multiple simulations of something and creating an average. For example, there's the Opta supercomputer, which predicts the outcome of the final table in England's Premier League, running 10,000 simulations of every match to try and calculate the most likely scenario. The model runs slightly less for each forecast. 1. Now, compared to 10,000, that might seem a little bit basic, and in some ways it is, but running one simulation presents a far more accurate version of the contest than 10,000 simulations can when they're averaged out. I'm not saying either approach is better or worse, but it creates a different outcome. Running 10,000 simulations, for example, vastly decreases your margin of error, which is great if you want to work out probability, but it also vastly decreases the precision of the result. With the model, I want to know what the outcome will be. No ifs, no buts. That means if the underlying data is accurate, the model should be far more accurate in predicting the level of success of each song. But if the data going in doesn't match up with the actual behaviour on the night, the level of difference can often be much higher. It's a high-risk, high-reward approach, which could be almost exactly right on some entries, but totally wrong on others. I'd say that with the model, it's healthy to look at the numbers with a margin of error of about 15% in the semifinals and 25% in the final. If every country came in within that scale, from my perspective, I'd be delighted. Number 6. The rise of the English language? This might sound weird, but go with me on this. The major shift in the Eurovision Song Contest in the last decade has been the proliferation of entries in native or other languages than English. A decade ago, in Stockholm 2016, all but one of the songs in the grand final was performed with at least some English lyrics. In current projections, it's highly likely that this year's final will have more songs in a foreign language than English overall. But English still remains Europe's most commonly spoken tongue. And rather than songs in native languages standing out among a majority English lineup, this year the opposite is true. In 2025, we also had a similar phenomenon, and the majority of songs that overperformed compared to our expectations were songs with English lyrics. Despite the unmistakable trend towards native language entries, the last three winners of the contest all won the juries with entirely English lyrics. This year, in particular, the main contenders are in native languages like Finnish, French, Danish, and Greek. So I wouldn't be surprised if songs like Eclipse from Australia, My System from Sweden, and others stand out a little bit more to viewers who may like the sound of those other contenders, but just don't understand what they're about. This is a powerful force that has shaped Eurovision a lot in the past. It was so powerful in the 1990s, the UK and Ireland were actually good. Number 7. The contenders themselves. In the model this year, I quickly identified what I saw as 8 songs that looked like they could be in some form of contention to win Eurovision this year. They were Finland, Denmark, Greece, France, Sweden, Australia, Ukraine, and Israel. But that is based on a small sample size, mostly made up of those who love the contest. While fans have been firmer than usual around Finland in particular, with Liekin Hayton currently dominating the Eurovision World Poll, which is a good indicator of a song's chances, bookmakers haven't had the same kind of confidence that they had with Kai and Baby Lasagna, incorrectly as it turned out, in the previous 2 years. A lot of the justifications for those songs being contenders rely on previous assumptions about Eurovision holding true. Israel and Ukraine, for example, are heavily predicated on their public vote being in line with previous years. Denmark's is based on its strong staging from the national final, and whether it will still be a standout once everyone's brought their concept to life. Even Finland's pre-contest favourite status is based on the opinions of a small segment of the audience. So, the protagonists of our story today may not be the protagonists on Grand Final night, and there is every chance that a song like a Moldova or an Italy could come out of nowhere and become a serious contender for the crown. Number 8. The Anti-Eurovision Effect. To predict the Eurovision Song Contest, you need to know the rules. Ballads usually appeal more to the juries. High-energy songs usually appeal more to the public. A more dynamic staging is more likely to catch the eye than someone standing there and singing. We know these things innately. But all rules are made to be broken. This year, there is a song that looks to be deliberately trying to be as non-Eurovision as possible. In the model, Portugal has almost never done well. In 2025, it was very negative on Deslocado by Napa, a song that everyone was lining up to declare dead on arrival before the first semi-final that year. But after it qualified, suddenly everybody claimed that it was because the song was a breath of fresh air. What they really meant was that it flew in the face of the rules. Sometimes, quiet and tender is the loudest sound on a Eurovision stage. This is not a one-off. In 2024, Hollow by Dons was similarly written off for Latvia, only to qualify for the grand final and fairly comfortably. Portugal's winning song in 2017 even, Amar Pelos Deutsch, was nothing like a pre-contest favourite. If you remember that far back, Francesco Gabani was the runaway leader in the odds. But Salvador Sobral won the most points of any song in the contest's history that night. And this year, Rosa by Bandidos do Canto appears to be going on the same trajectory, with the model not seeing a path for it to qualify at the moment. The group are standing there in plain clothes in those first rehearsal shots, and a lot of people have said that it looks a little bit simple, but I think they're doing something very smart. In such a dynamic, high-energy first half of that semi, with Finland, Greece, and Sweden all big and loud, Portugal's will be as far from Eurovision as it gets. And for a large group of audience members who simply do not care about the rules of this contest, that's enough to completely shatter our expectations. Number 9. The Unexpectables. The Eurovision Song Contest is live. And when anything is live, nothing is expected. The one thing that no simulation can ever predict is what happens in the moment. Pressure does things to even the best performers. And the idea of millions of viewers watching you changes the context of any showcase. Coupled with the fact that the lead vocalist doesn't get to rely on their studio vocals, and every performance is suddenly a high-wire act. The model can account for everything, right up until the performance, but not a bum note. Somebody stepping on the wrong cable, like what happened in the case of Zoe May last year, or a shot failing, like in the case of Colleen in 2024, can derail a performance on air. All of those things naturally have a massive impact on the impression each viewer makes on the audience. And with most viewing the performance completely blind going in, the worst thing they can think is, ooh, that wasn't quite in tune. On Inside the Model, we recently spoke to professional vocal coach Zoe Stibbe last week about how the singers manage their voices ahead of the contest. In a competition where almost everything else is controlled and tight, the voice is the distinctive live element. That makes it the most important and the most risky part of every performance. Number 10. The future is unwritten. Tell me this. If the model was absolutely 100% guaranteed to be right about everything, would you want to look? I'd bet your answer's no. Because the whole thing that makes trying to call the winner of the Eurovision Song Contest so exciting, so fascinating, is that the future is unwritten. We cannot possibly account for all of the things that will affect the result next weekend. The weather on the day, what's being reported on the day's news, whether one of the artists had a bad night's sleep or not. I created the model to try and get as close as possible, and I do believe that next week it will be able to help us predict each show with greater accuracy and knowledge than just by looking at the betting odds or talking to your friends. Last year, it successfully called Cyprus and Czechia's surprise exits at the semi-final stage, while also spotting Iceland and Armenia's qualification chances when almost nobody else made the call. There will be moments like that, and there will inevitably be misses. Even as we have more data about how Eurovision works than ever before, it's almost becoming harder to see the valuable data through all the noise. My hope is that this year, the model, more than anything, simply allows us to think about what's to come through a more accurate analytical lens. And if by listening to this podcast this year, you feel that way, then I've done my job. Thank you very much for listening to this interrogative episode of Inside the Model. It's just a little bit more time left for me to tell you about the final updates that will be happening over the next 2 weeks and those all important predictions on the show days, what we're really here for, the model's final calls. The next update will come on Sunday night, by which point I will be in Vienna. That is going to be a kind of pre-contest rundown, where the lay of the land is for each of the shows before we get into show week and we see these performances with our own eyes. On Tuesday afternoon, Thursday afternoon, and Saturday afternoon at 3 p.m. Central European time, the model will make its official final projection of what would happen if the Eurovision Song Contest was held today, because Eurovision will be today. And those results will be what I gauge the success of this on. So you'll be able to have those in the afternoon and use that as a way of getting yourself excited for what's to come in the evening. And as always, nothing will go as expected. So enjoy the Eurovision Song Contest this year. And if you want to hear more from me and the ESC Insight team, we will be doing a daily podcast from Vienna on Show Week. So make sure you tune in for that. Until then, I hope you've enjoyed the numbers this year, and I will see you soon. Goodbye. Thank you very much for listening to Inside the Model, a James Stevenson production for ESC Insight. We'd like to thank everyone involved in making this program. And if you want to find out more about the model and follow its weekly updates from now until the contest, head on over to escinsight.com.